Welcome to Season 3 of One Day You'll Thank Me,
a podcast for smart parents.
I'm Dr. Tara Egan.
And I'm not a Dr. Anna.
I'm a mom, a therapist, and an author.
And I'm a daughter and a kick-ass high school student.
Each week, we'll discuss a different parenting topic.
And we'll interview some fantastic guest experts.
We'll leave you with practical tips and information.
Plus, you'll get the perspective of a teen.
Stay tuned, everyone.
Boom.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to One Day You'll Thank Me. I'm Anna, your co-host.
And I'm Meredith Eaton, your other co-host.
We're switching things up today. Meredith and I will be the co-host, and my mom, Dr. Tara Egan, is going to be our guest expert. She's written a new book, her third parenting book, actually, and it's called First Time Mom's Toddler Discipline Handbook. We're going to interview her today to find out more about it. So if you've got an infant or toddler or a loved one who does, stay tuned. Aunt Mary, thanks for co-hosting with me today.
Thanks for having me on. I'm super excited. And I know most people don't know me. So just by way of explanation, it obviously makes sense that I was the person you picked for this because I have no children. I don't particularly, you know, enjoy children in a lot of capacity. So, you know, it makes sense. For the record, I do have a grandson because I was smart enough to marry a man who had already raised children. And now they are having babies. And so what I like about all these parenting books that Tara writes is that it helps me to figure out exactly the opposite of what to do because I'm a grandma, not a mom. And so I don't believe in rules and structure because that's what moms are for. So it makes perfect sense. And I'm super excited also because I've been trying to convince Tara for a really long time to do this tell-all episode. So finally, here we are. I've known your mom since she was 12. So I've got a lot of things to share. I've got a lot of secrets. I've got a lot of behind the scenes stuff. And I'm really excited to dive in on it. And the fact that Tara has COVID is also good because I feel like she's not really going to be up for fighting me when I just take total control of this podcast.
Oh, this is like a coup is what you're saying.
Yes. Although you're the one that has to post it. So I guess I don't have as much power as I would like to think.
Yeah, I can edit out anything I hate.
It's going to be a pretty short podcast.
All those skeletons I have.
Yeah, I know. This is going to be actually really boring. Tell all.
Kids are great. Not.
I know. Oh, just everything you talk about, I'm just going to be like, and that's why I don't have kids.
Yeah.
You guys are great saleswomen for this new book I have.
I will say that if I had known there were like these guides to having children, I may have been more interested in it when I was younger.
I feel like you needed to see my sample size of 2.
Yes.
Before you were even remotely interested in believing that I could have parenting advice that would result in nice kids.
I will say though that I never really had interest in having kids. Watching you raise your kids reinforced it because it's so much work to have good kids. You have really, really good kids. Like they're smart and personable and socially responsible and, you know, delightful to be around, which is not my normal experience with teenagers. But I watched you from birth shaping them into being like good human beings. And that to me just seemed a bigger responsibility than I could take on. And I was just like the constant vigilance was just, I was like, nah, I like to sleep late.
Yeah.
Well, now I can sleep late because they sleep late.
That's
true. They're teenagers.
Yeah. Now she's like, I'm going to bed. Bye.
Yeah. Like, they stay up and they watch TV together and eat snacks.
Or I'll wake up late, like already late, and I'll be like, where's mom? And like, she's still sleeping. Mm-hmm.
I like my sleeping in. Now I have COVID, so I get to sleep in, right? I can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Trapped.
Yeah. That's your room now. No one will come in or out alive.
I know. She shoved the paper for this episode under the door. I haven't even seen my children today.
Well, I like that she shoved the paper for the episode, but not food.
I know.
What are y'all doing over there?
You're not going to start.
This is make my jeans look looser. Okay. Yeah.
For all of your great parenting and raising great kids, the nurturing part is a little.
Well, I was in the bathroom this morning opening up all my beauty products to see if I could spell any of them, and I can't. So I have Kim Kardashian's perfume. Can't even smell it.
Wow.
You lost your smell?
I lost my smell.
Oh, no. I thought it was getting better when your voice was getting better, but now your voice is still bad. So you suck.
I'm really not that sick. I mean, I know I sound like I have a cold, but I'm fully vaccinated. And you know how I am with the masks. And sometimes I make you wear two masks when we're out in public. Apparently, karma kicked me in the butt. And so I'm the only one in the house who has it. And everybody's been tested. One more test coming. But I don't feel that bad. But I sound worse than I am. But I'm definitely going to use this to sleep this afternoon and have my dinners and food served in a tray, which really kind of sucks when you can't smell it.
Remember that time I came down and I was visiting, it was Halloween, and you were sick, you stayed home from school, and I stayed home and showed you what it was like when someone is like super nurturing and takes care of you when you're sick. And yeah. I put my groceries in the house, so I like did it.
I don't allow my kids to get sick. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. That's why she took the opportunity when Aunt Mary was visiting.
Yeah.
To get sick.
Yeah.
And so I made her all kinds of stuff. And I was like, she'd be like laying on the couch and I'd be like, do you want anything to eat? And she'd be like, yeah. I'm like, no, no, stay. She's like, what?
Oh, whatever.
I'll get it for you.
These kids are constantly sitting on the couch being like, Mom, can you hand me a drink of ice water? So
yeah, because that's the only thing you can do.
I know. That's true. That's true. I'm like, all right, now it's turning into roasting Mom. I wrote a book.
I like this episode.
I wrote a book. Some moms make dinner. Other moms write 3 books. We all have our talents.
All morally neutral.
Yeah.
Different moms have different talents.
Exactly. And this is a podcast where we're here to talk about my new book.
Yes.
So can we get focused, ladies?
Okay. We'll do the tell-all stuff later.
Yeah. And you're going to feel really bad if I get really sick with COVID and you were saying mean things to me recorded.
Yeah.
So in all seriousness, it does make some amount of sense that you asked me to be the co-host because I do know you forever. I have read your books, but also I work in publishing. So it's not totally random. And I help people write books. I help people write nonfiction books to grow their businesses. And I like to think that I helped you write this book. Moral support, getting through the editing process, if nothing else.
I know. That's the part that's the worst for me emotionally.
Yeah. So, all right, let's talk about this book. Well, let's talk about your other books, first of all, just to give background. Your first book was Better Behavior for Age 2 through 10, and that was published by Lesson Ladder in 2013. And I remember you writing that book. I remember spending a lot of time on the phone with you, moral support.
It was like in the middle of my divorce.
Yes, that's right. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
I remember a lot of frantic phone calls towards the end of just being like, is this normal for the editor to change these things? And is this book going to be good? Is it worth my time? All that stuff. And the answer was yes.
Mm-hmm. It's a good book.
And I was right.
I stand by it.
Yes. This was a good book. And it was a good transition point, I think, in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And then your second book, Adolescence, A Parent's Guide, was published in 2020 by Rockridge Press. And that book I related to more. You talked more about your own kids and that. That's pretty much what I'm interested in.
Yeah, I remember that book. Like, I literally see it right now. I see both of your books right now, but because it's talking about adolescence and like teenage stuff, like we do a lot of, especially when we do solo episodes, we really refer to that book and, you know, use that as a resource when we're doing these kinds of things, which is nice and useful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I stand by that book too. That's a great book for parents who have kids who are making their way through middle school into high school and even beyond high school, because the book, like one of the last chapters, talks about launching your kid from those high school years to post high school. So that book was an easier book to write than the first book I wrote. The first book was difficult to write in that it was my first book and I was going through a divorce. And I just wasn't as confident in myself as a writer. The second book, I did a lot of research for. So I read a lot of articles and other books, and I really wanted to make sure I was well-versed in the research. And then this current book, the First Time Moms Toddler Discipline Handbook that is just being released now in August of 2021, this has been my easiest book to write because it is really building blocks of, you know, as your kid's moving from infancy into toddlerhood, like what can you do to set the stage for success? And by that, I mean not only in how you interact with your child, but also within yourself as a mom, you know, because we do need to take care of ourselves. We need to get into a mindset of how we're going to, like the culture we're going to cultivate in our home, you know, when it comes to discipline, how we talk to our kids, how we talk to ourselves when we're struggling. So that was easier for me because it just feels like a lifetime of stuff that I've learned, and it was easier to write it down. And there was a lot of places to write some fun anecdotes. And my editor was really encouraging about keeping it lighthearted and easy to read and just not too dense. Because when you're a toddler mom, you don't have time to be reading some huge, massive textbook.
Absolutely. And your second book, the adolescence book, I use that a lot when I talk to clients when they're asking about like different ways to structure a book. And I use that one a lot because it is also very easy to just take a piece of it and to flip through and find a specific lesson or a do this, not that kind of moment. And so even though I didn't publish it or whatever, but I still use it a lot actually as an example, because I think it's a really, really nice structure for a nonfiction book.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good to know. You're right. It is structured differently than my first book and my third book, because the adolescence book is broken down into age groups. And then within those age groups, it's broken down into issues, like common issues you would see within that age group. Whereas this book, the Toddler Discipline Handbook, it's really taking an overall approach and talking about, like I said, how to set the culture within your home and how to communicate and be responsive to your toddler. But then there's also very specific anecdotes. So the final chapter, one of my favorite chapters, it's basically like question and answer where somebody shares a common situation, and then I'm able to respond to how that parent might go about handling it. So there's a nice combination of general overall advice, but then also some really hardcore specifics, though, that you can apply it right today as you're reading it.
I always find it interesting, the science and the background that you give of just like, this is how the brain is working in this 3-year-old or this 12-year-old or whatever, you know, depending on which book it is. For me, I always find that to be so helpful because it's not just about why can't I get my toddler to do this, or why, you know, why is my grandson do this weird thing? And I think that there's a lot of tendencies that I've seen in some of the parents that I'm around to say things like, well, my kid's just bad at that, or my kid just doesn't listen, or my kid just is too wild. But then when you actually read your book and you see, no, that's just the way a 3-year-old's brain works. Like your expectations for them are off, and that's why they're not doing, you know, what you're expecting them to do. So that's my favorite part. And it helps me be, I think, I don't know if it helps me be a better grandma, because I really don't have any roles anyway about being a grandma. Like I'm just always a yes is my role. But it at least helps me understand what's happening.
Well, and I think it taps into our patience. When we know the kid is doing exactly what they're built to be doing, even if it's annoying or frustrating, is different than thinking this kid is being naughty or this kid is doing something to me, even though I've told him or her not to do that. So it keeps parents in a space of recognizing like, all right, you know, this is completely expected that they'd be doing this, even though I don't want them to have this behavior long term, or even though I might find it abrasive. So I think that's where parents benefit from really understanding what's appropriate for each developmental stage.
Yeah, I think it can help like normalize the fact that like kids, if they have tantrums, that it's like, it's okay that they have tantrums because that's what kids do. If mm-hmm. your kid has a tantrum, it just means that your kid's like off or something's horrible going on inside their head. It just means that, you know, sometimes kids have tantrums and it's okay and how to handle it.
Yeah. I like with toddlers that they're, when they are at that age where they're obsessed with repetition, you know, they want to read the same book over and over. They want to watch the same cartoon over and over. And I like that because it's very simple for me. Mm-hmm. I don't have to, I'll read this book 100 times. I don't care, because that's easier than finding a new book. Or now we have to go outside and do an activity. Like if you're happy reading this book, I'm happy reading this book or watching this cartoon 1,000 times. But I've seen other people, like my husband in particular, he gets bored and he wants to move on to something else. So like he doesn't want to read the train book 400 times in a row. Mm-hmm. So he'll be like, oh, let's read a different book now. And he'll pull it out. But the kid just wants to read the train book. And so he gets mad. And now we have an issue. And now it's like a thing. And now we have to come up with an entirely new activity to distract from the fact that he wants to read the train book and Papa's tired of the train book. Mm-hmm. So for me, when it's just like, this is just what they do. It's not that they're dumb. It's not that they're boring. It's not that they're like stuck, you know?
Yeah. Well, you as a grandma have endless patience for that kind of stuff, sure. You know? So
yeah. Cause I know they go home eventually.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not, it's hard when it's okay. We've been reading the same book for 12 nights in a row and it's the end of your work day. And you know, the yeah. other sibling wants to read a different story or, but it is helpful to know what's normal. And I say that in quotations because there's such a broad range of what's typical in kids this age. And mm-hmm. as parents, our goal is to be responsive to our particular child. That's called goodness of fit parent. When your response to your child is compatible with the child that they are. So even though there's some general parenting concepts that are pretty universal, and if you stick to them, chances are you're going to be in the right lane. At the end of the day, you got to be responsive to the kid you have. And so if you have that kid who needs to get out more energy or needs to experience a consequence before they learn, because they're not a kid who's just going to learn from watching someone else experience it, or they're really tactile, or they're just super talkative, whatever it is, you know, we want to be responsive to who they are.
Why don't you tell everyone about how you got your book deal and how you went from therapist to author?
So yeah, that is an interesting story because originally, I was a school psychologist and had a very traditional school psychology job in schools. And just as a fun side project, I started blogging. And it was a parenting blog. My kids at that age, you know, Anna, I think you were about 3 and your brother was 1. And I would just write humorous anecdotes and put pictures up that my family could see. And writing does come easily to me. Like, it just does. And I don't have to sweat over what words to write down or how to get it into coherent order. So it became really fun for me to write these blog posts that were amusing and informative. And as the blogging process went on, you know, and you start to gain followers and people are interested in what you have to write. And I remember my dad saying, well, your posts are so informative. And I was like, Dad, I'm not really writing to like educate anybody. I'm just entertaining myself. And he's like, no, but you know, you have a doctorate, you have all this education, like your posts are informed, like regardless of what your intent was. So my blog caught the eye of a publisher who was looking for authors who would be able to write about parenting. And they really wanted to have doctoral level authors in their repertoire of people. So she reached out to me via my blog. I thought it was spam. She contacted me through my work email. Like, I think there was like 3 contacts before I was like, oh, wait, is this real? So she and I connected. And, you know, over the next few months, it evolved into a book deal where I had to outline the book. I had to create the content. And then, of course, they supported me with editing and helping to design it. And then it was published in the fall of 2013. So that was a really crazy thing because I didn't have to approach a publisher. I really didn't even have an idea for a book. They had an idea for a book, and then they wanted to find the right author to write it. So I wrote that book. It went well. And then I kind of went back to my life of starting to build my therapy business. By that point, you know, I was well through my divorce or into my divorce and was building Charlotte Parent Coaching. And so whatever, a few years went by. And then another company reached out and said, hey, we're also looking for an author to write a parenting book. We see you already have written a book before. We like your style. Would you consider looking at a book proposal we have and seeing if you might be a good fit? So I did. I reviewed the proposal. I submitted a writing sample. And then it's a very quick turnaround. At this point was my adolescent book. And they have you write the book in like 8 weeks. So I do well with timelines. I do well with structure. And Mayor, I know you know this, like the part for me is not creating the first draft. It's when the editor sends back the edits and you know you have to go through it all in a minute, exhaustive way. To me, that's the most difficult part of writing a book. So with the adolescence book, we had to restructure some things. With this book, it went very, very smooth. So it's my least painful book to write. It just flowed out of me. Didn't have to do a lot of rewrites. Had a great editor.
Here's one of my tell-all moments that I can pop in. So you had gotten the first draft, first feedback from the editor back on this newest book. And you called me and you were like, I can't do it. I can't open the email. I'm like, oh my gosh, I hate this part. And I had to like talk you through it. The same thing I always tell my clients is like, this is your opportunity to polish and make sure this is exactly what you want to say. And also I know with you, especially at this point with your third book, that you're not going to have that much editing to do. I promise you, you never do. If anything, it's just conceptual. You know, the editor says, is this the way we want to, you know, talk about this, or is this the right place for this? So I talk you through all that. You weren't really buying it, but we do our dance where I tell you and you complain and then you buckle down, you wait till you're like almost out of time to do the work. And then you sit down. So we have this whole conversation. We hang up and then like 20 minutes later, I get a text. Oh, it really wasn't anything. You had two little comments.
I was a big baby.
I remember that too.
I remember that baby.
You were like, didn't you like section off your day because you like had to do it or something? And then you like come down early and I'm like, oh, I already had that. It was like turned out to be not that big of a deal or something.
I was embarrassed. I had to send an email to my editor and I was like, I'm sorry, I was an asshole. I ignored your email all week and it could have taken me 10 minutes to take care of it on day one.
And that's when I say, told you.
Yep.
Put your big girl panties on and get your work done because it's never as traumatic as you think it's going to be.
I know. The editing scares me. I worry that it's going to be, I'm going to be off base or that. And also, I just do feel like I try to create a really solid first draft. And so then I'm like already over it. I'm like, whatever. Say whatever you want.
That's your high achieving anxiety, I think.
I think it is. We'd have to refer back.
From one of your episodes?
Yeah. I think it's like episode 4, season 1 with Ashley.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I learned a lot about that, a lot of insight into the two of you. I mean, I already knew all of it, but now I have words for it.
Yeah, fancy words, scientific words.
Yes. The obsessive need for perfection, the discomfort with feedback or potentially being told that you didn't do it perfectly the first time, which is, I think, what your editing issue is.
I want to do it perfectly the first time.
Yeah, totally reasonable. Totally, definitely realistic.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm like that. I'm like the balance. I was telling Anna last time you guys visited that part of how you're able to stay on the functional side of high functioning anxiety is because I was there all through high school to be like, eh, it doesn't matter. I don't. What's a B? Who cares?
I feel like we're in a continuum because Anna's definitely the most intense of the three of us. I feel like I've simmered down in my old age.
A little bit. You still have your moments.
And Mare's like, if you could see her background right now, you wouldn't need us to say anything else. She's got so much clutter.
To be fair, I am in the middle of reorganizing my office, so it's particularly bad right now.
You are always in the middle of reorganizing. Like this is like a 3-year
reorganizing.
Journey.
I just moved the piles from one side to the other. Yeah, so being high anxiety, just very strong attention to detail and like the way things need to be. That's what it is. So Tara, when you were having your son and I came down to stay to take care of Anna while you were in the hospital and doing all that, which I was, again, that was another period where I was a little bit drunk with power.
Yeah.
Because I was unsupervised with a toddler, which felt fantastic, especially because Anna's dad really had a lot of doubts about me. And I was sort of torn between wanting to prove him right and prove him wrong. But anyway, after you came home back from the hospital, and he was like a newborn. So I still was spending a lot of time with Anna, but she also was very much like, okay, like she was very compliant when I was, it was like 2 days, I think you were in the hospital 2 nights, I want to say. So she was very compliant. She listened. She knew I was in charge. We had a great time. We did all kinds of stuff. We did craft projects and, you know, made presents for the baby. But then when you came back, she was like, okay, you're done now. You're not in charge anymore. And it's over. And you were very busy with Dylan and, you know, just new baby stuff and like trying to sort it out. And so I was still trying to like help. And we're having an issue where it was bedtime and you had like, you were upstairs and you called down, okay, Anna, time to go to bed. We were watching a Disney movie or something. And so Anna was like, no, I'm not going to bed. I just want to finish watching this movie because it was kind of an awkward stopping point. And I think just with the chaos of a new baby, like probably there hadn't been the like 5-minute warning kind of thing. It was just like, oh my gosh, you should be in bed. And I didn't know about all those details of how to motivate a toddler. And so she was just like, no, going to watch till like a natural stopping point. You weren't saying you're going to watch the whole thing, but you were like, not right now. So I sat there for a second and I was like, I'm here to be helpful. I don't know what to do. So then I was like, okay, Anna, we got to go. We're going to go to bed. And Anna was like, no.
Wow.
So then I was like, had this moment where I was like, okay, I have to be the adult. And so I tried to think like, what would Tara do? What do parents do? And so I got stern, which is when I realized that is not on brand for me. Like that's not a good fit. So I was like, Anna, we're done now. This is it. Turning the TV off and we're going to bed. Anna looked at me like, who are you? Like, but you went to bed, but you were mad. No, it was nap time. It wasn't nighttime. It was nap time. But you gave me the most evil look. You were like, fine, turn off the TV and stomped up to your room. Wanted no good nights, no nap time, whatever. You wanted no part of me. Forget it. I'm done. Look, you've ruined the movie anyway. I'm going. So she goes up. So then I'm thinking about during nap time. And I was like, why did I do that? Like, I'm Aunt Mare. Like, I am fun. I do not make rules. And like, so I felt really bad about it. So you get up from your nap and you gave me the silent treatment. You wanted nothing to do. You were just like, you don't exist. And so I was trying to be like, do you want, you know, banana? Can I help you? And you were just like, no. So
wow,
the whole day goes on, the whole afternoon, if you just give me the silent treatment, which to be fair, like when a toddler gives you a silent treatment, it's kind of funny, but it felt really bad. So finally it's like late afternoon and you're sitting on the couch and I sit down next to you and you don't move, you stay. And so I said, are you a little bit mad at me for what happened earlier? And you go, yes. I said, it's not really good when Aunt Mare tries to make rules, right? And you go, no, you shouldn't do that. I was like, you know what? You're right. I promise I will never do that again. And you were like, okay. And then I said, are we better? You go, okay, never again. I was like, promise.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
Wow.
So manipulative.
Jeez.
She knows what's going on. She knows who Aunt Mare is.
Oh, and wow.
To this day, I have never been the heavy ever again. There's like a moment with my grandson where I was like, had that moment of like, oh, I'm going to have to be like really like severe right now. And then I was like, no, I'm not.
If he's not going to get electrocuted or run over by a, you know, bus.
Yeah. I was like, it was like he was supposed to come inside for dinner or something. And I was like, eh, don't. Whatever.
He'll eat eventually.
Yeah. Let me bring your pizza to you. Let me bring your chicken nuggets to you.
Exactly. Let's have a picnic outside. It's yeah. Fine. So, but also there's when you're the Aunt Mare or the grandma or whatever it is, there's always someone else who could be the heavy, the mom. Yeah. And I'll say that a lot with my grandson. I'll say like, I'm not here to crush your dreams. That's what your mom is for. Like, I'm here to make them happen.
Yeah. So. You're really selling this book, Mare.
That's what I'm here for.
There's probably some parents who are like, I don't want to crush my kid's spirit. I'm not buying your book.
But that's what a good parent is. And I'm not saying that's what your book is, but that's, you know.
No, it actually is not about crushing their spirit. It's about maintaining their spirit and having a high quality, nurturing, responsive relationship. So you don't have to be the parent who's screaming, you know, from the top of the stairs at your kid because they are taking a whiz on the floor or are like threatening to smother their younger sibling or whatever it is. So,
yeah. Well, that was the thing with Anna, with that story I just told, like she knew what the routine was for going to nap, right? You get a warning, you get whatever the process was. And I was violating it by just sort of trying to like shove her off to bed and she was not having it, mm-hmm. which is a testament to the smooth way things normally ran in your house.
Yeah. Having some structure and familiar routines. I mean, kids eat that up and they don't think of it as something to be oppositional about because it's just part of their day. But if we don't have that or we're really arbitrary about how we communicate our expectations, you know, one day we don't take a nap and we jump on the couch and we watch Disney movies, and another day because mom or dad is tired and we're like, oh my gosh, today we need a nap. And the kid's like, what the heck? I hardly ever have to take naps. Like, I'm not in trouble. Why are you making me do this? And then, you know, and then after a bit, mom's like, never mind. We're past nap time anyway.
all of your books are your strategies and things you've done with your kids, and you don't write or advocate anything that you haven't done in your own family. And it is.
And it's easier to decide on your parenting style, like me, when you've read all the research too.
Mm-hmm. Which is what's great that you're putting it all into these books and passing it on. You're not just randomly pontificating on a topic. You practice what you preach, which makes it easier for people like me to come in and be the fun Aunt Mare, because I know that they're fine. You know, and like kids who don't have that, I've had some friends who have do the whole, they sleep when they're tired and I don't have nap times and we let them explore and like, ugh, it's not fun. There's a lot of stress. There's a lot of tension. There's a lot of cranky children, which I have no patience for. And then it's not any fun to be Aunt Mare.
Yeah. You got to find that sweet spot where you have enough structure so that they're in good shape mentally and emotionally to learn and participate in their world around them. But then there's opportunity for them to explore and get out their energy and see their funny personalities.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. Toddlers are funny.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
Stuff they say, stuff they do. Oh my gosh. Adorable.
Yeah.
Didn't you teach Anna to lift up her dress and show you her belly and you would give her Mardi Gras beads? She's three.
Yes.
She's like, Mom, look what I can do.
Yes, because she had just learned where her belly button was.
Yeah.
And so she would pull her shirt up. I think she was younger. I think it was before.
It was before Dylan was born, because she was like about 18 months.
Yeah, she's about 18 months, which is a really great age to make them do stuff that is
doesn't
not appropriate.
Stick. Yeah.
So she would pull her shirt up to show her belly button. And I was like, just go a little further. It's hilarious. And so, and they just repeat everything you say. So that was, I was like, go all the way and say, give me beads. Mm-hmm. And we happen to have some Mardi Gras beads for some reason. Not earned in Mardi Gras.
No, it was like part of a toy or something.
Yeah.
she was modest even then.
So,
well, what else do we want to talk about as far as the book goes?
Do you want to give us an overview about the content of your book?
I feel like I've done a pretty good job. I mean, it's like I said, it's meant to be a lighthearted, friendly read, not super intense. It's broken down into five chapters, and it has that balance between what parents, but mainly moms and, you know, specifically can do to maintain their own patience, their own temper, make sure they're managing self-care and that they're in a place to be responsive to their kids. But then it talks about, you know, where your kids are at developmentally in this age group, what to expect from them, what type of support they need so that you're putting them on the path to being emotionally regulated, you know, being able to manage their feelings and being able to follow structure and not feeling like you're in a power struggle with your toddler all day long to have them get dressed, be able to go through a routine activity like stopping at the grocery store, being able to go on play dates, things like that. And then at the end of the book, like I mentioned earlier, we have that toddlers in real time. And there's several questions that have been proposed. I'm going to give an example of one. Like the first one says, my toddler throws a tantrum every time we go to the grocery store. He grabs items off the shelves, screams at the top of his lungs, and tries to kick me when I calmly tell him no. I don't have any help at home, so I have to take him with me. What can I do? And then I give in this response five components that parents can consider when it comes to responding to their child if they're behaving that way. So in that last chapter, there's several situations like that that parents can use as a reference point. And it sort of ties in a lot of the principles we talked about throughout the book. So I like it. It's also a really pretty book. Like the design is really great. It's really, I would say it's like my prettiest book. They have a lot of great visuals and I don't know. I'm happy with it.
I would say like if someone asked me to describe your parenting style or sort of what these books kind of advocate and sum it up, I would actually say that your objective is function. You know what I mean? Living a functional life, living a life with your kid or your adolescent, depending on which book you're reading or how old your kid is, that works for everybody, that is not ruled by outbursts and breakdowns and, you know, chaos and big feelings that aren't getting met and all that kind of stuff. And that everything you have are these different strategies based on research towards that end. And so it's not like some parenting books that have a very strong philosophy that's very narrow. And, you know, whether it's religion or it's diet or it's whatever, where they're like, you have to do this to have a good kid. You're like, here's a bunch of different ways you can accomplish this outcome. And this outcome is what we want to achieve based on what we know about what is a functional life. And I think that's one of the things that makes the book so approachable and that makes you so approachable as parent coach and in your practice, is because that's, you're not pushing a specific philosophy, you're pushing function. Which, who doesn't want to live a functional, happy life with their family?
Well, that comes from when parents call me and, you know, and they're interested in getting parenting support. One of the most common themes is how they're not enjoying parenting, or they're not enjoying their kid, and they're not enjoying family life. And yeah, kids are annoying. Kids ruin a lot of stuff. I get it. I always say kids ruin everything. They do. But at the same time, like, I really enjoy my kids as people. I enjoy time spent with them. I rarely get sick of them. And some of it is because we have a nice structure. You know, they are functional beings. They're not overly dependent on me or icing me out. I mean, we have a real nice give and take relationship. And so I truly enjoy them. I do think they generally enjoy me. So that's the goal for me. Like you said, I mean, you use the word function, but, you know, taking it a step further, it's really hard when you're a parent and you're sitting in your car thinking, I don't even want to go in to the house at the end of a workday. Or like my alarm goes off and you think, oh, here we go again. You know, like the merry-go-round of chaos starts. Like, that's not a good feeling. People don't feel competent or confident when they're in that situation. So we definitely want to avoid that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think too many, I think there's a certain culture, at least on social media or whatever, of people just accepting that that is the norm, to be unhappy, to be struggling, to be frustrated and overwhelmed and crying in the bathroom and, you know, that kind of thing, which is just, it's just, that's just what parenthood is. And I don't think that is at all true or need to be true.
Yeah. Or if it is true, it needs to be very rare.
Yeah, sure. Everyone has a bad day.
I call it bathroom candy. All moms should have some bathroom candy, which is where you hide the candy. And then you're like, I'm going to the bathroom. Leave me alone. And then you eat some cookies.
What?
Shh. Don't tell Anna.
Oh, my God. Oh, secrets revealed. Anna's like, I know. Oh, tears, I missed out on candy.
This is the tell-all episode.
I remember I came home from school one day and I was like, Mom, I feel off. I'm like sick or something. And you're like, here's some medicine. You gave me like a little chocolate bar. And I was like, okay, this is awesome. Chocolate candy. I mean, medicine. I'm chocolate medicine.
Yeah.
And then that was a little joke for a little bit.
Yeah.
You're like, you want some medicine?
It was like a Tic Tac. Hershey Kiss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To be fair, chocolate does have medicinal properties.
It does. So. Mm-hmm. It's well established.
Yeah. It's good for stomachs. That's, I think chocolate maybe could cure COVID. I think it's worth a try.
Yeah. If I could taste it, that would be great.
Oh, yeah. You might be able to. Maybe some really like dark chocolate, like that real intense.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay. So what if I'm a parent listening to the episode and I think, Tara seems so smart. I would really like to work with her directly to help me be happy at home and enjoy parenting. What would I do?
Well, that's a good question. So I do take on parent coaching clients. So if parents visit my website, the www.drterryegan.com, they can go to the section that says something like one-on-one with your family. And there's different parent coaching packages. And so with a lot of families, I am working with co-parents who are going through a separation or divorce, and we're working on their relationship and communication with each other, because that's such a stressful time. So that's definitely like a specialty area of mine. But I also have a section on the website called Comprehensive Parent Coaching. And that's for the parents, you know, maybe they're not going through a separation or divorce, or maybe they are, and it's just not the primary thing that's their area of concern. And they just want support. They want support with giving consequences. You know, how do I talk to my kids so that I'm connected to them, but still be an authority figure? Maybe their child is wrestling with something that has to do with technology or social media or peer relationships, school, you know, my kid is really struggling in school and they're not using organization and I'm having a hard time figuring out how to help them with this without just resorting to yelling. So there's a lot of different issues the parents can get support on. You can buy a package. You can buy a package of 3 90-minute sessions or 5 90-minute sessions and really just get the support you need. And we're really focused on solutions. You know, I want enough of the background to get to know you guys as a family and what the personalities of your kids and where your strengths are and where you're struggling. But I want you to have really concrete takeaways. So yeah, if you're a family out there, your parent out there who wants some support, whether it's with your toddler or all the way up through your teenager, take a look at the website and reach out and let me know.
Are there any geographic issues with that?
It's all virtual. So I am a therapist and I'm licensed in North Carolina. And so my therapy clients are in North Carolina. My parent coaching clients can be anywhere. So I've had people contact me as far away as, you know, Australia. I've had Canadian clients. It really just depends on us matching up our schedules as far as time zones. So I'm in the Eastern time zone and, you know, we just need to make it work. The person who called me from Australia, we ended up not working together because we would have literally had to work together at 4 a.m. You know, was there either going to be her 4 a.m. or my 4 a.m. And so we ultimately decided that wasn't going to reduce her parenting stress load to have that happen. So yeah, but usually we can make it work. I mean, when it's virtual, it's a little easier to be flexible on time. So there's definitely some families that I work with after their toddler goes to bed at night. You know, they put their toddler down at 7:30. We get on a call and they can get off early enough to still have some of their evening. So, but it can't hurt to ask. You can always send in a message and schedule a free consultation call. And then I get to hear about your family. You get to hear about my services. And then, you know, at no charge, you can have that conversation to determine whether or not I might be a good fit. So I only take on a certain number at a time. I'm not full right now. I just finished up with 3 clients where we finished up our work together. So I have openings. So take advantage if you're interested.
Awesome. That's very cool.
Any final information you want to share with our audience?
I don't think so. I guess I just want to say I appreciate everybody listening. I appreciate everybody supporting me in getting the word out about my book. I appreciate all of you who are vaccinated and are wearing masks, because as much as this is a bummer that I have COVID and I'm stuck at home, I'm well enough to do this interview. I'm well enough to see all my online clients. And that's because of those of us who are all working together to try to manage this virus and support each other. So thank you to the listeners who are helping with that path. So that's my last thing I wanted to say.
I would just add that your book is available. All your books are available on Amazon. And so anyone who's interested, go to Amazon. You could just search actually Tara Egan and all the books will come up. So if you can't remember the individual titles.
That's right.
And it's on sale this week.
I know. By the time this episode comes out, I think it's going to come out one day after the book goes on sale, the paperback. So the Kindle version has been on sale for a couple weeks and we've got some nice reviews up. And then as this episode comes out, it should have been released a day or two before. So it's there. Go to Amazon, buy it. If you buy it, make sure you leave us a review. I love to hear input from parents on what they like or don't like about books, because I'm probably going to write more. And so I'm writing them for parents. So let me know what you think.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right. Well, stay tuned for some new episodes of One Day You'll Thank Me. They come out on Wednesdays.
I love you, sweetie.
I love you, Tara.
I love you too, Aunt Mir.